Welcome, listeners, to a new episode, bonus episode of Oh My Word. Today we have a special guest author. His name is Russ Thompson. Russ is someone who I met in one of my writing groups, and if you could only see the pages that he writes, you'd realize why I was so excited. But you can, because he has books that you can buy. So look at how that all works out. But anyways, let's talk about that stuff. So Russ, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
We're very excited to have you. So before we talk about what Russ is writing and why it's so exciting to have it, and what he's writing, why it's so exciting, let's talk about how do we even get to this point? Because from what I know, you weren't always a writer, or you had other things besides for being a writer. So what is your background? Where are you coming from that you decided that you have to write, that you have to become a writer?
Okay. My background is that I was an educator for a long time, and I was a teacher, mostly at the middle school level, and then I became an administrator. I was a principal and also a district administrator for a short time, and I retired in 2015. My career, it was in Los Angeles. I worked with the Los Angeles Unified School District, and then also the Sentinella Valley School District. And I was principal of three different high schools, Van Nuys High School and Luzinger High School and Gardena High School. So when I was in the classroom, I taught English and reading, primarily reading. And I also have a credential as a reading specialist.
Oh, well, what is a reading specialist for those of us who don't know?
Okay, well, this is me at my very first school, Bret Harte Junior High School, and I'm teaching reading. And so I had eighth graders, and for so many of these kids, they were reading at about a second to third grade level.
Oh, wow.
And so I had to scratch around and do the best I could to find materials that they could read. And it was very difficult. And then at the same time I was teaching at Bret Harte, then I started working on my reading credential. And basically with kids, there's three different reading abilities. There's the ability that kids have to read independently. Then there's the instructional level where they can read material that's kind of like has a medium difficulty for them. And then there's the frustration level, which means that the reading material is way too hard for them. And if kids are at the frustration level, and that's really typical with a lot of textbooks, they can read a few words here and there, but basically it's just too frustrating for them. And they may act like they're reading it, but they're really not. And it turns kids off to reading. And it's really about kids developing fluency with reading, which means they need to spend a lot of time with reading. And if they don't do that, if they don't get that fluency, they're going to be struggling forever. And that was the situation with a lot of the kids that I worked with. They, because of a lot of issues growing up, because of a lot of issues growing up in poverty and a lot of issues going on as far as kids, in environments that were not stable and not conducive to learning, a lot of kids were behind. So that's how I started out my career as a teacher. That's what I wanted to do, was to work with those kids. And so the years go by, and it got a little better as far as materials for kids that needed help with reading. I'm talking about kids at the secondary level. But really, there is just a huge shortage of books that are interesting for kids who are struggling with readers at the secondary level. And so that was my background.
And that leads you to what's called the high-low interest, which is, no, high-low level, which is high-interest, lower-level reading.
That's correct, yeah.
So I actually want to go back a little bit to the education thing, but let's just explain what that is for a second. What does it mean to have a high interest, low level reading? Because for some people, we only know reading as far as, you know, middle grade, young adult, or chapter books, whatever. But these are people who kind of fall in between that area, because it could be an older reader who's not reading to level. That's where the high interest, low level is. So what does that mean? Like, what does that mean when it looks, what does that look like in a book format?
So like when you, the high interest part, that means basically stuff that's interesting to older kids. So it doesn't mean, you know, like baby stories. It means stories about teenagers. And then reading level means basically the shorter the sentences and the simpler the vocabulary, the easier it is for kids to read. And so it's about stories about teenagers that are going to be interesting to them, that are written with short sentences and simpler vocabulary.
Wow. Which, just saying, just commenting, haven't seen some of your pages, it seems like so many that it's just gut punch, because everything has to be so short and specific. You don't have time to spend on on long description or long prose. You don't have the space for that.
Well, the other thing is, it's really important. You have to, the books have to be written in a way that are going to hold kids' interest. And so they have to be, in a way kind of like written like thrillers, where, you know, it's going to keep kids engaged at a high level. And so, you know, like you read certain thriller writers, like, for example, Lee Child comes to mind. That's kind of what he does.
Yes.
It's kind of like the same way, same thing that I'm trying to write for the kids I'm trying to reach, although I'm not writing thrillers. I'm writing about real situations that kids are involved in, but trying to write it in a thriller style where there's a lot of stuff going on, where they're, I'm trying to write page turners where kids are not going to put the book down. They're going to keep going. And then the books are short. So basically 10,000 words. And so my goal is for a kid to get the satisfaction of finishing a book, and gradually after the student's reading levels improve, then he's going to start reading more challenging books. So that's where it's at.
So it's almost like a gateway book.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. Another way to think about it is as a chapter book. It's like a chapter book, except for older students.
Right. Well, because it does also have the shorter chapters. And you do have a lot of thrillers that are written like that, like short chapters, so you just keep turning the pages, mm-hmm. right? They don't let you sit for a while. So I guess you got that also. Well, do you ever, while you're writing it, do you ever feel like you wish you had more space or more words to be able to write with? Or do you like this style of just being very short and specific?
Well, I'm kind of used to it now. At first, I didn't know what I was doing at all, you know, when I first began. But now that I'm into it, I like it. You know, it's like the movies, the stories move, and I feel like I'm kind of like in a groove writing these shorter stories, these shorter books.
It seems like what you're talking about, that you should be able to find it in every bookstore, but I don't know that you can. Like, how many of these books are really being written or getting out there versus I'm trying to fill a hole that's not being filled?
The closest thing out there are these books by Scholastic, by the author Lauren Tarshis. And okay. She writes this series called I Survived. Uh-huh. And they're middle grade books. And so it'll be about one of her books, for example, I Survived Hurricane Katrina. And so it's got, the protagonist is a 12-year-old kid who's living in New Orleans, and here comes the hurricane. They try to leave New Orleans, but their car, I forget what happens, they run out of gas or they have to turn around or something. But anyway, they ride out that storm and their house gets flooded, and it's just awful. So anyway, that's the most comparable thing I've seen as far as kids that are at a book that's high interest, low reading level.
Well, and then you just said that's middle grade and you're writing for YA. So, yeah. Wow.
And so there's books out there. There's a publisher called High Interest Publishers. They put out books. There's Saddleback Press. They put out books for older kids. Learner Publishers, they put out books. There's also a publisher called Orca. It's a Canadian company. Those are the major ones, but it's they're not the kind of books that you're going to find in a bookstore, except for that I Survived. You can find those, but that's what the market is.
So the kinds of reader that these books are for, and I know this, you know, you can only answer according to your experience here, but Okay. Are most of these readers, is it just because either they're not getting the support at home to be at the reading level that they should at, or are some of these kids, they're just not like the, you know, the quote unquote, the English brain. So that's why they're not there. Or is it a mix of things? Or is it just, you know, any of the kids who might in school be called like the quote unquote, the dumb kids that you're trying to reach and say, hey, you know, we have something for you too. Or what were the kind of experiences that you had with the different kinds of kids that would have, that you're like, we need these books for them.
These are kids that have been struggling in school for one reason or another. And most of the time, I mean, the kids I've dealt with, it has nothing to do with their cognitive ability. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, they've had disruptions in their lives, a lack of good role models as far as role models, people who have been academic. There's all kinds of reasons why kids will be behind in school. It's basically kids that are struggling in school. And, here's an example. That one of the books that I wrote about, was about a kid whose dad gets sent to prison. Well, that's common for a lot of kids, that their dad is away. For many kids, you know, it's common for living in an area where parents, where there's a high incarceration rate. And so what happens to a kid when he goes through something like that?
Right.
And he may go to school and he may be trying, but at the same time, he's got all these things going on in his head about, you know, worrying about his parent. And when kids are in situations like that, I know I'm like that. If I have some kind of problem going on, I certainly can't concentrate on learning. And you have that going on with so many kids. And then they start, oh gosh. You know, once you start having difficulties in school, it just escalates.
Yeah.
And a lot of kids, you know, they lose hope and they get the belief that they're not going to be successful in school. And once you believe that, you know, of course you're not going to try.
Right.
I know. So that's basically what happens. It's about kids who lose hope, quit trying, and then things go from bad to worse. And so how do you turn that around? I mean, that's what has to happen for these kids to start being successful. And so that's what I'm trying to do with these books that I'm writing, is to give kids a positive experience with reading, so that they improve their reading skills and so that they go on from there and start, once again, so they go on from there to start reading more complex books and also, you know, have success in their classes. One of my schools where I was at, we started a special reading program, and these were kids who, you know, had extremely low reading skills. Brought in a teacher that was really skilled in working with these kids, and some of them, boy, they just made outstanding progress. And, you know, they surprised themselves with how good they were doing, how good they started to do. So.
Well, that's why from any of the pages that I've seen that you've written, all your stories so far seem to be contemporary. A lot of them take place in either lower income neighborhoods with kids who are going through more than just, you know, my birthday party got canceled, which obviously I'm simplifying it, but that they're going through all this real stuff. So is that because you are trying to mimic, mirror the reader and really give them the story that could kind of be them or be someone that they know? Or just not like fantasy?
No, it's trying. I'm trying to reach these kids by writing stories about things that they're going through. You know, another book is about a kid whose mom is an alcoholic.
Right.
You know, that's certainly a terrible thing, but it's certainly not unusual. The stories are about kids growing up in real, real tough circumstances.
Wow. And all of them, without any spoilers, do they all have positive, optimistic, or happy endings?
Yeah, they all do. And basically, they show kids overcoming the obstacles and start moving forward.
Well, so I wonder if because you have such small space, as I say, because it's so limited to write, when the kids are overcoming an obstacle, it can't be some sort of like ex machina situation, right? It has to be the kid finding something, I guess, in himself or something like that. Like, it can't be big and flowery, or it can't be like a big trumpety moment. Or, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, do you think that when the kid is overcoming something in your story, it's a big moment for a kid, but it's not necessarily going to be like a big screen moment. You know, like, you know when you have the big screen moments that you feel like, you know, there's going to be a round of applause, like there's doves flying everywhere. And that's not necessarily going to happen in a story where it's just about the kid who says, okay, I'm going to try again tomorrow. But that trying again tomorrow might be like their ultimate triumph moment. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like a quieter story. Does that even make sense?
I would say quieter. And really what it's about is, you know, a kid turning a corner and starting to go in the right direction after having been going in the wrong direction or after having been going in a negative direction. So, I'm trying to think. You know, okay, so there's one story. There's another story I wrote about, another book I wrote about a kid with real bad reading skills. He struggles, but because he gets help from a teacher and he starts reading basically high-low books, he turns himself around. And so the book stops off. It cuts out in, I think, about November or so, and then it resumes in May, I think. And it's the science fair, and this kid has been working real hard. He's getting good grades now, and his reading has improved tremendously, and he's worked very hard. But he still doesn't believe in himself. But by the end of the story, what happens is he enters the school science fair. He overcomes a lot to build a science project, and he gets a prize in the science fair.
Wow.
And so it shows the kid taking positive steps, and it shows the kids having success. It doesn't mean that their whole life is turned around, but
right.
You know, the kid's going in the right direction after having basically, you know, feeling terrible about himself and not going anywhere.
Right. Well, I guess that also complements or goes along with how you said that if a kid has struggled with reading or is worried about one thing, then there's this domino effect of all these other things it can affect. So maybe in this regard also, if a kid feels like, you know, if I can make the right decision in this area, maybe I can make the right decision in other areas as well.
Right. You know, and one of the biggest things I work real hard at is trying to make the books real.
Right, okay.
So that a kid experiencing these problems would sit down with the book and say, you know what, this is a real book. You know, it's not something that's... I don't know, like a fairy tale or something like that.
Right. Oh, so I guess that means that you're stuck in contemporary then. I guess that's just going to be your genre.
Well, that's what I like to read anyway. You know, everybody's got different reading preferences, and so that happens to be mine. And so, you know, so I'm also writing in an area that I like to read in also.
Right. Well, does that also contemporary fiction, or is that also nonfiction, biography, or narrative nonfiction? Was it?
When I was working, all I read was nonfiction. All I read was stuff like how to how to be an effective leader, how to teach effectively, how to improve student achievement. That's all I read. And then I started reading fiction after I retired. And so now I'm getting into all this stuff that I've been wanting to read for a long time. So that's what I'm doing. So I always liked John Steinbeck, and I always liked Ernest Hemingway. And now I'm certainly reading a lot of other people that I really like. Cormac McCarthy, he's a pretty straightforward, blunt writer.
Yeah.
He also writes some stuff that's very bleak, but he's one. I'm reading this book right now by a guy named Tim O'Brien. It's called The Things They Carry About Soldiers During the Vietnam War.
Wow.
So anyway, my reading preference is reading stuff that's contemporary.
Right. Well, I kind of had to laugh when you mentioned Steinbeck and Hemingway, because that's so teachery of you. For the kids who are not necessarily great readers, and even if they're struggling and things like that, have you found it? I don't know if you've ever seen it or not. Would you say that a lot of them are willing to listen to a good story? A lot of them do like stories, and it's just a matter of packaging the story for them? Or is it not necessarily true, and some do and some don't, you know?
I would say it's a matter of putting the story in a form that the kid can understand. So like some kids are going to have difficulty reading the story, but they'll certainly enjoy a good story that's told to them, or a good story that they see in a movie or on a TV show.
Every writer wants to hear that kids love stories. that's our favorite thing. Like, oh, of course they all love stories. We want them to love stories. But that just shows it's its own kind of, it's its own genre. I don't know. Would it be considered its own, the high, low? Demographic, yeah.
Like, here's an example. So, like, the kids that my books are for are going to be the ones that are sitting in the classroom, and you ask them, well, what kind of books do you like to read? These are the kids that have never read a book. Mm-hmm. And they don't want anybody to find out about it, but that's really true. If you were to talk to them individually, they would tell you, I've never read a book. I don't like to read.
Right.
And so it's a hidden problem that a lot of people that do their best to cover it up. I remember one time I was at a hardware store. And so there's this guy looking at a can of paint. And he said, hey, he wanted me to read part of the label to him. And I did. He was acting like it was his vision that was bad, but I know that it wasn't. It was because he could not comprehend what was written on that paint can.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of people that have reading problems that they will always figure out ways to cover it up.
Well, and is that necessarily comprehension, that whether or not they could understand the material? That's some yes and some no.
It's not the comprehension. It's just the ability to decode what's on the page. And, you know, and that's another problem. So, like, some kids are dyslexic. And right. So that means they'll look at a word printed on a piece of paper, and sometimes they'll reverse the letter. So the letter B as in Baker, they may think it's the letter D as in dog, stuff like that. And when you have that problem, it's extremely difficult to read. One of our grandkids, he has that. He's got that, and plus he's ADHD. And he's finally doing better in school now, and he's having a good experience. He's in second grade, but, you know, it's extremely difficult. It has nothing to do with anybody's cognitive ability. It's what would be called a processing disorder. So that's what it is.
So are there, well, I would think that today where you have so many different kinds of therapy and specialists, are there ways of dealing with it, and it's just a matter of getting the kids what they need to be able to deal with it?
Yeah. So Yeah, so like, for example, if a kid is dyslexic, there are activities that a teacher can do with the kid in the classroom that are going to help. In the print versions of these books I've written, they're written in this, they're printed in this font called Open Dyslexic Mono. And it's a font that is easy for kids, not easy. For kids that are dyslexic, it's a preferable font. It's a font that they can read easier than others.
Oh, wow.
So.
Why?
So, it's one that they're less likely to reverse the letters and things like that with this font.
Wow.
So.
It's like a whole hidden world that you're addressing. Because everyone just thinks, you know, you go to a bookstore, that's an entire... This is the writing world, and it's not.
Yeah.
There's like a whole undercover.
Well, I mean, shoot, you know, it's a societal thing, and it's like so many problems in our society take place because of, you know, people that have not been successful in school, and you know. They can learn from watching TV, and a lot of people, that's where they get all their information, or, you know,
right.
It's just not good.
Right.
So we need to have people that are functioning at the highest levels possible in our society.
Right.
And, so.
Well, I don't know if you have an opinion on this, because I actually just thought about it right now, so I didn't warn you I'd be asking this, but what do you think, or have you ever given thought to audiobooks for kids like this, or is it also important for them to be actually reading? Because audiobooks will also give them a lot of words, but they're not seeing it written on a page.
I'm not sure. I would prefer, like, for example, sometimes it can help a kid if they listen to a book and read along with it.
Right. Okay.
But it can also be a crutch.
Right.
And so that's not going to help a kid improve if he's really just sitting there listening to the story and not really reading.
Right.
So it has to be done. You just can't turn a kid loose with an audiobook and expect them to improve his reading skills.
Right. And there is the value in the reading skills, not just because you have to be able to read paint cans, but because that's going to help in other, in different areas as well.
You know, I mean, you can't go very far in our society unless you have a high level of education. And the people that don't acquire that are stuck, and they're always going to be at a disadvantage. And so, you know, we as a society have to work together and do the best we can so that all of our kids are achieving at a high level.
Right, right. Well, some people might say, oh, if a guy's, you know, blue collar worker, if he's building a house, you know, why do I need to read? It's like, well, because you have to be able to read the paint can. So no matter where they're going to end up, it sounds like you need reading and comprehension. It's not,
yeah.
Paint cans are also important to read, even if you don't want to become, you know, a tech worker.
Well, yeah. Like for a democracy to work, we have to have an educated society.
Yeah.
We're hurting ourselves as a society if we let kids go through school and not achieve at a high level.
Right. Well, this is obviously, this just as a general question, have you seen that from when you first started teaching to when you retired, do you see more resources coming into the classroom? Even if, you know, whether or not it's too slow, too fast, or whatever, do you actually see that there has been some improvement in these areas?
There are more now than there used to be, because there used to be almost none.
Well, okay.
But there is certainly a need for much, much more. So, like, for example, a kid that's got, has difficulty reading. I mean, there are some books out there that the kid is going to enjoy and have success reading, but there needs to be a lot more. There's got to be a lot more for kids to choose from.
Yeah. So, because also as a teacher, if you're supposed to be teaching English to a kid who can't read, like, are you just supposed to quietly try to get them on, Quietly tried to get them these other books that they can actually read.
So here's an example. So one of the schools where I was principal, we started a sustained silent reading program. And so this is where every kid in their classroom, we ring a bell. For 20 minutes, they're reading in a book of their choice. And, so where do we get the books for this? So we wanted each classroom to have a library. And so this is my wife and me. And so we hit used bookstores and looked for Goosebumps books for the kids to read. We tried really hard to find stuff that the kids were going to enjoy and be able to read and that was appropriate for kids in school. And we had to dig around for it. And, you know, we did find books and put them in cardboard boxes and give them to the teachers. It certainly wasn't ideal, but we had to do the best we can with what we had.
Right. So are you of the opinion that within reason, it doesn't matter what the kid's reading as long as they're reading something?
No, I don't agree with that.
Okay.
It needs to be, there has to be stuff out there that they enjoy reading that has meaning to it.
Okay.
If it's just something that's kind of like, if it's just something that's a story that's not, that doesn't have much substance to it.
Right.
You know, kids aren't going to, that's going to turn kids off to reading because you're making them read stuff that they can't relate to or that they will never enjoy.
Right.
So the stories have to be really engaging for kids.
Yeah. Well, so I don't know if you have an opinion on this also. I just thought about this also kind of like with the audiobooks. Now there's a big push for graphic novels that they try to turn a lot of novel, either turn novels into graphic novels or they start off as graphic novels because they feel like that's also kind of like a gateway kind of book because that one. So do you agree with that, that could be a gateway?
I agree, although that's another one. It's also a matter of kids going on from there. I mean, I certainly would not want a kid just looking at pictures and paging through a graphic novel.
Right. So it's one thing if you give them the graphic novel in eighth grade because you have to catch them up, but if they're still reading it in 10th grade, then we haven't made progress.
I mean, it's a matter of the words that are on the page that the kid's actually going to be reading, not just the pictures.
Right. Well, because that goes back to if we're developing, like, are we just trying to give them a story or are we actually trying to develop a skill, I guess the reading skill?
Yeah.
Which makes a difference. Yeah.
So it's got to be a highly engaging story and it has to be vocabulary at a level that the kid can read independently and the sentences have to be short. Those are the basics. That if those things are there, then it's a high-low book. And you know, if a kid is reading in a high-low book, he's improving his reading skills, and then once again, he's gonna hopefully develop a love for reading, and then want to go on to read more complex material.
Right. Well, we talk about the vocabulary. Like how many. There's always the English that you think of being as more academic English, and then there's regular English that adults are using in conversation that a lot of times is not, you could hit that almost as a teenager, that level of you know, English speaking. So when you talk about it has to be the right kind of vocabulary, you're not going to put the quote-unquote academic words in there, but are you still putting in, you know, 90% of what they're hearing in conversation, or do you have to even go lower than that?
I work very hard to keep the language simple because anytime if I put in a word that's going to slow a kid up, like for example, if I put in a bunch of big words and the kid can't read them, he's not going to be able to get any meaning out of it. And it's going to make them feel dumb. So, you know, I when I use a thesaurus, it's usually to look up a simpler word. That's what I'm constantly doing.
Oh, wow. Can you think of any off the top of your head that you recently had to look up?
Yeah, let me think.
Okay.
How about if we go on? I'll think of something.
Okay, well, I was actually gonna, because we're actually going, I don't, unless there's something else that you want to add now, but we're actually going, we just went more time than I thought. I was like, oh wow, I gotta catch the time now. So I was almost gonna wrap up now, but if you could think of something for that thesaurus thing, that would be interesting.
Here's a good example. The word beneficial. That you would not find
Ah.
that word in one of my books. You'd find a word like good or helpful, some, but not beneficial.
That's a very good example. Yes. Wow. Huh. Oh, good. Okay, so now we could wrap up.
Okay.
I kind of warned that, and if you just want to answer off the top of the head, or if you gave more thought to this, I always like to ask for a fill in the blank of, I love it when, writers, editors, publishers, books, stories do X, and I really don't like it when they do X. So can you fill in the blank for those for that? You don't have to think, it can be off the
I'm
top of your
okay. Like, so
head.
like, I mean, I appreciate the efforts by publishers such as Scholastic, putting out those I Survived books. Those are really important. And I applaud that. And I hope that there's more of it, because we just got have to, as a society, make sure that every kid learns to read at a high level.
Yeah.
There also needs to be a lot of the books for kids, a lot of them are. I also like it when books are out there that are going to appeal to boys.
Yeah.
Here's an example. Like, okay, like Judy Blume.
Yep.
She's one of my. I mean, I think she's just great. And she wrote this one book called Tiger Eyes, and I keep it on my desk because I look in that constantly for examples of great writing. But me as a kid, would I carry around a book that has Judy Blume on the cover? The
Yeah.
answer is heck no. And there have so this so what did I read as a kid? War books.
Right.
And because there's no stigma attached to those.
Right.
And so they're so anyway, we need a lot of stuff out there that's going to appeal to boys. And right now, that's the other thing that there just is not enough of. There's not enough books out there to appeal to young males.
Well, do you think they're trying to, because young males should also appreciate this, or just because they just haven't expanded it enough?
It's just okay, so like for example, you're a kid, I mean you worry about your masculinity.
Yeah.
So a bunch of the schools that I worked with, if okay, like now kids carry backpacks,
Right.
but I can remember when I first started working, backpacks were just not something kids had.
Right.
So is a kid going to carry a book home? Is a kid going to want to be seen carrying a book home? The answer was no.
Huh.
At one of my schools, dismissal time, our principal had to stand at the gate and not let a kid out the gate unless he had a school book.
Wow.
So there's a lot of stuff going on, and so like for example, the books that I have out there, I work, I have a cover artist that I think is great, but my goal is I want these covers to look like adult covers, something that a kid, especially a boy, is not gonna feel ashamed to carry with them.
Oh, very good. Right. That's a very interesting point. Yeah. If you put too many flowers and girls on it, then they just might not.
Right. It's just not there. They're not going to look at it because it's going to, kids are insecure about a lot of things, and boys a lot, it's really easy to be insecure about your masculinity. And so that has to be addressed. People have to realize that.
Oh. Okay. So we need more. We just need more of all of it.
Yeah. There
Okay.
has to be books out there that are going to feel the voice.
Yeah, I feel like in middle grade, now you get more of like the Diary of a Wimpy Kid now. You got all those things now. But it does seem like there's a lot. It seems like girls are like the big target audience for a lot of books. Yeah.
Well, for kids' books, most of the authors are female authors.
Yeah.
And along with literary agents and the whole industry. And so a lot of times, and also, it's funny, it's sort of like a, most of the books that are read, for most of the kids' books out there, girls read most of them. And so because boys don't read as much, there's less out there for them. And because there's less out there for them,
they're not reading as much. Reading. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of the male authors are going toward murder mysteries and thrillers, and not, which is not what this age group is. Yeah.
Right. So if I'm a kid in junior high or high school, you know, I'm not going to feel shy about carrying around a thriller.
Right.
But it also has to be written at a level. It's got to be written at a level that I can understand and enjoy.
Right.
And that's what I'm trying to fill with my books.
Well,
and I hope that a lot of, you know, that's what needs to happen as an industry. I think, you know, publishers really need to work on that.
Yeah, well, look, everybody we can get to read more books is always good for everybody. So,
yeah,
amen to that. Well, Russ, thank you so much. This has been so interesting and informative. We hope you'll be very successful in getting these books out there. We'll direct everybody to where they can get your books.
That sounds good. Well, anyway, thanks. I really enjoyed talking.
Yeah, thank you. This was a bonus episode of Oh My Word Podcast. To find out more about Russ Thompson and his work, please visit the link in the episode notes. To find out more about Oh My Word and to follow us and see all the stuff we're up to, check us out on Instagram at Oh My Word Podcast or visit eltenenbaum.com. Thanks so much for joining us. Catch you next time.